I don't know how I'm supposed to follow all that. As I said this morning, in closing, why don't we just, we got cake waiting on us here. I mean, do you know about the cake? Oh, okay. I just blew that one. I didn't let you know about that one. I'm sorry. You were outside when they announced that we had a celebration afterwards here. I think I would have been, to say hurt would not have been the right word. I would have been disturbed, bothered if I could not have been here for this day. I know that you came, in the summer of 30 years ago? So I know that the official date, June 26th, end of the June month. And somehow or another you put this thing off until here in October so we could all be together. And I'm overwhelmed with the excitement to be able to be here. It almost, I've never wanted to be a senior pastor, you know. But this almost has made me envious to, I could use a truck, I'm telling you why. I'm just joking. Whoever was responsible for that Redskin stuff, I believe in church discipline. And Well, they had you there in that moment there of receiving the gift and also having to put up with that. But what I really want to know is none of us heard anything after Sam Dalton said, "Pastor's a beast." We didn't hear anything else he said after that. We were all laughing, and I would love to hear what the rest of that was, Brother Sam. Anyway, I don't know exactly everything I can say. I was thinking this afternoon and even some last night, I don't remember the first time Brother Dave and I met. I don't know that when you're children that you meet. It's just you're growing up together. And I don't remember exactly at what age time frame we were in a setting within which we were there together to receive the instruction of the Word of God. I can still see the old church auditorium where we were together, and I can still see the events in a building that was packed and jammed with people back there in Garland, Texas, where we grew up. We were just kids, and I suppose through the events of as we got older and started being more involved with athletics and sports, we were pretty much drawn together through that event, and we were always playing ball together. We were teasing some last night. I think it was Brother Jeremy said, "Tell me some funny stories about Dad when you played sports." And really, there's nothing a whole lot funny, but one of the things that I remembered was, I mean, he was just a great athlete, and he really was. It's like that. We're like that old bumper sticker. Have you ever seen it that says, "The older I get, the better I was"? You know, I mean, really, you talk about how good we were back in the day, and he was always the quarterback, not just in the reality of the sport of football. He was just seemingly the quarterback in our youth ministry. He was just kind of you meet people who just have that natural gift of leadership. And Brother Dave's had that. And he led when he didn't know he was leading. And here we were, just all existing. It just seemed like he was kind of a bit head and shoulders above us, though he would say, "No, it wasn't true." It's just that we'd have a testimony meeting in our youth meetings, and our youth pastor would say, "Who'd like to share a word of testimony?" And some guy would stand up, and he'd share something. Somebody else would stand up and share something. And sometimes it would be beneficial. Sometimes it'd be kind of, cheesy and goofy and that sort of thing. But when David Pittman stood up, I remember thinking you could hear a pin drop. And every head turned to listen to whatever it is he had to say. And he, honestly, folks, what you see today is exactly what he was at the age of 16 and 17, which is just a few years ago we were there. I mean, wow. And you can you just see him standing up and giving a testimony and just kind of going through the motions? And he'd say, you know, I was reading in my Bible over here in Nehemiah. And I'm thinking, Nehemiah? What's in Nehemiah, you know? And then he'd share something and he'd give some word of testimony. And every eye would turn and look at him. Because the truth is, what he was saying, we knew, was from someone who was real. He was saying something that was legitimate. There was no phoniness to him. There was no look at me behind it. It was look at the Lord, at what I've got to say here. And I told him one day, we were at camp, young people. I've told this to young people across the country, though they didn't know who I was speaking of. When we were at camp, 17, 18, I don't know. He's much older than I am. And we were going to get up early before everybody else to get ready for the day and jump in the showers and try to beat everybody. And when I got up and when whatever alarm I had woke me up, I started scrambling around to get ready. He probably doesn't remember this, but he was already dressed and ready. And he was standing on the front porch and the door of our cabin was about half opened, and I could see that he was talking to somebody out there on the porch. And I was frustrated because he had gotten up before I had, and he was already ready. We were going to try to beat everybody to get ready to face the day. And I was grabbing my stuff and trying to wake up at the same time. I'm looking out there, and he's out there talking to somebody. I'm thinking, who else is already up? And so as I got my stuff, I was going to make my way to the showers. I looked around the door to see who else was already up and who was out there, and I didn't see any human being out there. And that's when the light went off in my head. I know what he's doing. He's out here talking to his Lord, starting his day off with his God. No wonder we all admire. No wonder we all look up to him. His walk with God is real. And I just took a moment to step out there on the front porch of our old cabin, and I said, Dave, I wish I had half your Christianity. I remember him kicking the concrete of the porch, and he said, man, he said, you're good. He said, don't be looking at me. And I said, I know you're not perfect. I know none of us ever will be till heaven, but I just want you to know your testimony challenges me, and it still does. And I am so thankful for his friendship. And I'm thankful for his faithfulness, and I'm thankful for his family. You are his family. Boy, that's an outline. I didn't even plan that one. Let me write that now. Friendship, faithfulness, and family. That'll preach. And my time is gone for sure. I need to wrap it up here already, but we're here to have some preaching. I'm just grateful for him very, very much. And I'm thankful for something that I do want to give you a thought. It seems like this morning I had to hurry, and tonight I need to hurry. Can I preach long tomorrow night? I mean, really, you folks are getting me here. Be back tomorrow night. I hope you'll plan to be here. Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4, the writer of Hebrews, whoever it was, the writer of Hebrews is telling his listeners, his people he wrote to, he was telling them, cling to Jesus. And I look back at Pastor Pittman's life, and I can tell you, as you well know, he's an example, as was demonstrated by all those images and video and picture tonight, of somebody who has been faithful. I mean, what price tag can you put on that? Now, I'm not preaching to just reminisce about him tonight. I want to challenge all of us to get a truth that I've heard since I was a young person, since your pastor was a young person, and you've heard for years, and that's this: cling to Jesus. The writer of Hebrews was writing to people who were, get this is heavy duty, you ready? They were Hebrews, and they were Jewish people who could have easily gotten distracted and pulled back into Judaism. They could have gotten pulled back into the realm of living under the realm of the law. And the writer of Hebrews was saying, wait a minute. And the key word of the book of Hebrews is the word better. And the entire message of the book of Hebrews is that Jesus is better than everything and everyone else. So why look to anything or anyone else? He said Jesus is better than the prophets. He tells us that in chapter 1. He's better than all the Old Testament prophets. He also says he's even better than the angels. As powerful as those angels were that you Jewish people, as he was writing to them, as he was saying to them, you know the angels were powerful beings, messengers of God. But don't worship those messengers and servants of God. Jesus is better than the angels. He goes on to say that he is better than Moses, the lawgiver. I mean, if there was a Mount Rushmore of Hebrew history, would the first carving, would it have been of Moses? If it wasn't, it had to have been maybe the second one for sure. He was saying here, Jesus is better than Moses. And then he says, and Jesus is better than the priests. All of those priests. You see, in that Jewish economy, in the Jewish world, there was a great deal of confidence and appreciation for the office of the priest. Look, the priest, especially the high priest, represented Israel to God. And that priest would represent Israel to God once a year as he would walk into the Holy of Holies, as he would present that very somber, sober, important offering on the Day of Atonement. And so all of Israel was so grateful for their high priest. He represented them. And that high priest would walk in there in that very, I would imagine, though I don't have it scripturally, I would imagine there would be a bit of a tremble, because the fact is those priests would wear bells around on their, at the bottom of their garments, so that as a man would walk behind that veil into the presence of a holy God, those on the outside with a rope that was attached to his ankle, to his foot, pulled out of the room. If he was in a sinful state, that high priest, as he approached the Holy of Holies, if they didn't hear those bells ringing at the bottom of his robe, they would just pull him out because he had failed the Lord. We have no account of that ever happening, but that's what he was there for. And that man, that high priest, would go in and would sprinkle the blood on the mercy seat, and he would present God's people to a holy God one day a year, Day of Atonement. And then he would come out, and in his own words, he would simply say something along like this: it's finished. I paid for our sins to our holy God. You understand, do you not? That's what Jesus said on the cross of Calvary. It is finished. Your sin has been paid for. The Bible says that man would walk in there, and he would come out, and don't you know, he would quickly rush out to get out of that place of such somber, sober, a holy presence of a holy God. But what does it say about Jesus? It says about Jesus, in fact, in chapter 4 of Hebrews, would you notice please verse 14? It says, seeing then that we have a great high priest, look at this, that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. Jesus, the Son of God, our great high priest, what did he do? He passed through the heavens after he paid for our atonement. He passed through the heavens, and the Bible goes on to say in the book of Hebrews, it tells us that he sat down at the right hand of God. There was no nervousness on his part. He was the, and he is the Son of God. So the writer of Hebrews is simply saying to the people of that day and the people of our day, Jesus is better. But did you see what we just read at the end of verse 14? Look at it again. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that's passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Look at this. Let us hold fast our profession. Now that does not say, hang on to your salvation, because you could lose your salvation. That's not what it's saying. Our salvation is eternal. It is secure. He is saying there, hold fast, hold firm the fact that you have put your confession of faith in Jesus Christ. Live it and stay firm to him. Here's the way I put it in my vernacular. Cling to Jesus. Just cling to Jesus. He's better than anything and everything else on planet Earth. Now, tonight, we sit here basically, for the most part, I would assume, a Gentile conversion experienced people of God. There may be some dear Hebrew folks that have come to Christ as a result of the gospel sitting in our midst, but you know, for the most part, we would be Gentile. So how does this apply to me and you? It applies to us in recognizing how it applied to them to understand this. We have a great high priest. So what does our great high priest, why should we cling to Jesus? Why has your pastor preached that for 30 years? It even came out in the video. Why has that been proclaimed? Why has it been practiced and presented by his own very life? How could that be? Why is that so important? Well, for one reason, it's because Jesus gives us security. Real quickly, look at verse 14 again. Seeing then that we have a great high priest. Now, the high priest in the Old Testament gave God's people, Israel, a sense of security. We have a representative. But did you notice here? It doesn't call Jesus our high priest. This is the only place in scriptures in which the Bible says that he is our, here it is now, great high priest. You and I use the word great all the time. To where the fact is the word great has lost its force. It's lost its impact. We said, you see that game? Man, it was great. Okay. You know, big deal. Or we even use it mockingly. You know, we say, oh, great. I got to stay an extra hour after work. You know, great. It's raining. You know, we use the word great in just kind of flippant ways. But here it is, friends, in this portion of the scriptures, the Bible is using it. It's the same word that was translated in other portions of scriptures in which the word loud, it was translated loud because it fit that context in another setting. The word loud and great. The idea there is he is in loud terms and in a great volume of words. He is great. He is our great high priest. What's the point? The point is this. You and I can live with great security. Yes, the security of our salvation, but security for daily living. When you are clinging to Jesus, guess what you have in your corner? You have the great high priest. And you can live in a way in which you can recognize that I don't have to be insecure about problems in life. Can I just cut to the chase and ask you something? Could your life be, is your life at times demonstrated by words like this? Are you ready? Worried. Panicked. Frantic, nervous, stressed, depressed. All those words kind of have a family of truth mixed in together. But let me tell you something. Most of us know full well what it means to live a life that is just eaten up with stress. When it comes to the matter of revival, can I just say to you, I have come to discover after all these years of ministry, there is something that has caused a lot of Christians to live their Christian life tapping the brakes and not being all out fervently going whole hog for God. And a lot of it is just, we're just stressed out. And just worried and frantic about life and how are we going to make it through life. And I'm not real sure how are we going to get through another day and another week and go through all these issues and burdens of life. Can I tell you, you reach a stage of life in which at some point there is an advantage of getting up in years. You look back on 30 years or much more than that in ministry and you look back and you say, Jesus has taken care of me all the way. Jesus has led me all the way. Jesus has paid my bills all the way. Jesus has taken care of us in the darkest of nights. He has been there. He is our great high priest. And some of you who tonight may be a new convert, you may be new in the family of God, we're glad for you. But I'm going to tell you something. You can put your whole heart trust in him for daily living too. You can live in security. You don't need to live in worry. You don't need to live in stress. So many of us are controlled by worry. We live in fear. I was pulled into my very, very first surgical procedure less than a year ago. I've never had surgery in my life, never. I've had a relatively healthy life until this recent battle. And I had to have a surgical procedure. I had to have a biopsy. Now, some of you, that means nothing maybe to you. I'm going to tell you something. It seems nothing until it becomes yours to have to go through. And they wheeled me in, and I was still, able to look around all this equipment. I didn't know what was going on. I'm looking at it, and I must have been very frantic looking because I started asking questions. My family will tell you I am Mr. Question. I just started asking questions. You know, what are we going to be doing here? You know, nurses and people running around and hooking things up and slapping me down and putting things back on me. And so I said, no, what's this going to do? Where are we going here? Are we going to go in? How's this going to happen? How's this going to work? And finally, some male nurse said, you're not even going to remember a thing. Don't worry about it. I said, what do you mean? He says, you're going to be a little loopy in a little bit. I said, I've been loopy a lot in my life. So I what do you mean? What are you talking about? They said, you're going to be fine. Just don't worry about it in a moment. It's just, you're going to just kind of be in la-la land, kind of halfway out. And I said, yeah, but am I going to feel anything? And he said, I hope not. Well, that wasn't real comforting. I was thinking, me neither. I don't want to feel you drilling inside of me to get a biopsy. I heard their voices talking way, way far away off in the background. And after a bit, somebody patted me on the back and they said, okay, you're good to go. I said, when are you going to do it? He said, we've already done it. I said, no, you didn't. He said, yeah, we did. I said, I didn't feel anything. He said, that's good. You weren't supposed to feel anything. I walked in there. I was wheeled into that room, a nervous wreck. Really, I was. I didn't know what was going to happen. I never had anybody drill inside of me before like that. And then all of a sudden, it was over with. You know something? You go through the issues and burdens and the trials and the sorrows and the question marks of day-to-day living. And we say, oh, Lord, where are you? He's never left your side. He is there with you. A man was traveling through the wilderness, I think it was in Africa, as this man from America didn't understand the jungle, didn't understand he was following behind this guide that was taking him through, and this guide in front of him had a machete, and he was knocking things down, and he was knocking brush aside, and he was clearing the way for this guy to follow him, and occasionally bugs would hit him, and tree limbs would come back and hit him, and the guide just kept going, and they were going on for quite some time as they were going through the bush. Finally, out of frustration, the American follower just simply said, wait a minute, mister. Do you even know where we're going? He said, where is the path? Where's the trail? I want to know where. Do you even know where the path is? The man stopped chopping with the machete. He turned around. He said, mister, I am the path. Just stay close to me. I'm making the path. And sometimes I think I have said, Lord, where are you taking me? What's going on? And you've been guilty. You know it. Lord, why is this happening? Why is this going on? Lord, where are you? He says, I'm the path. Just stay with me. Come close to me. Cling to Jesus. Why? He gives us security, number two. He gives us, number two, sympathy. Look at verse 15. He says in verse 15, for we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Folks, let me tell you what you have here. You have a double negative statement for emphasis. A double negative statement for a positive impact. Look at it. He says, for we have not and high priest, which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. The word touched there is the word sympatheo. Does that not ring a bell to you? It's the word that we get our English word sympathy or sympathetic or whatever. What's the Bible saying? The Bible is saying our high priest not only gives us security because he is our great high priest who is here for us, no matter what you're going through, no matter what trial. By the way, you may be just coming out of a trial. You may be in the midst of a trial, or you may be soon about to go into one. Everybody's been in one position or the other. You know that's true. And then he says in verse 15, because your great high priest cannot help but be sympathetic for everything that you're going through, for all of your infirmities, because he has been in all points tempted and tested just as we are, yet without sin. He is sympathetic. How could Jesus be sympathetic? I'll tell you how. Because just as true as he is Son of God, he became Son of Man. He left heaven and came to this earth. And friends, there is not a thing that you and I go through that Jesus does not full well understand. He knows. Can I tell you something else? He knows what we are going through. Get this. He not only knows, this ought to thrill your heart. Hang on. He cares. No one ever cared for me like Jesus, we heard this morning. Is that just a good song or is it the reality of your life? No one cares for me like Jesus. It bottom line is the truth. I have been a little more personal with you today, and I don't mean to be. It just seems to fit right now. I can tell you over this last year and a half, it was very special to get phone calls from friends like Pastor Dave. Hey, Morris, just checking on you. How you doing? I'm doing better, Doc. I'm doing all right. Okay, we're praying for you. I know. I know you are. Tell your people I love them. They love you. We love you. How's Lynn? She's got to kill you yet? No, she's not going to kill me yet. Okay. It just helps to know somebody cares. You get a text, you get a phone call, you get an email. But can I tell you who was really a help and an encouragement? Can I tell you who it was? It was people that had cancer. They knew. And I knew two men who had my type of cancer, multiple myeloma, a cancer of the bone marrow and of blood. And they contacted me. And I can't tell you how much it meant to hear from them. And they would tell me, now, you're probably going to go through this, but that you're going to be fine. You're going to make it through this. Why? Because they knew. And they cared. In fact, one of those guys said, you know something? Don't let that bone marrow transplant scare you. He goes, I've told people, I think everybody ought to have a bone marrow transplant. I thought, well, I hope to get there someday, but I'm not too excited about it right now. By the way, I haven't gotten there. I don't wish it on you right now. But the truth is, I get his point. It sure was encouraging to hear it. Why? Because he knew and he cares. But you multiply that thousands upon thousands and thousands and much, much more. No matter what heartache you're going through with your family, no matter what heartache you may be going through with your finances, no matter what you may be going through with your employment, no matter what you may be going through with the concerns about the future, no matter what it is, he is sympathetic. He gives to you a listening ear. So what does that mean? Well, it means what we can do in verse 16, and I need to close. He says in verse 16, he says, let us, now here's our word, therefore. Therefore, as a result of everything I've been saying, let us therefore do what? Come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. What's he saying? He's saying Jesus, our great high priest, gives us security. He gives us sympathy. And friends, get this. He gives us sanctuary. What does that mean? It means that we can cuddle up. I don't know of a greater verse in all the scriptures. There's probably some. But I can't think of a better verse tonight than this verse when it comes to the matter of seeking God in the matter of prayer. Look at what he says. He says, come boldly. The word us there. Who is us? Well, it's found for us back in verse 14. The us who have made a profession. Those who have put their faith in Jesus Christ. So he says, therefore, let us. Those are the ones who are believers that are in the family of God. What should we do? We should come. The word come there is written in a tense and in a mood, which means, are you ready? Continuously. It means repeatedly. Just keep coming. You don't ever wear him out. He's the one who keeps saying, come, come, come unto me. Come, and I will give you rest. Keep coming to me. That's what this verse is saying. You don't have to worry about being wearisome to the Lord. Keep coming. And then it says, come boldly. Are you ready for this? I love this. The word boldly there, I think you know what it means. It means to come with confidence. It means to come with urgency. It means to come unhesitatingly. Are you ready for this? It means to come with a freedom of speech. Have you ever gone to the Lord in prayer and just said, Lord, I don't even know what to say, but I'm frustrated and I feel guilty for the way in which I'm putting this. That verse right there says, come to him like that, with a freedom of speech. And say, Lord, I don't even know how to pray. I don't even know what to say about this situation, but I am just in my humanity, I am hurting. And oh God, I come boldly. That's exactly what it says. Come with a spirit of freedom of speech. Lord, I need you. And he is our sanctuary. We can come to him with any of our needs at any time. I'm going to date myself. I hate to do this with young people in the room. I don't remember when, in the late 70s, early 80s, I don't know. Back in those days, if you needed cash at the bank, first of all, the bank had to be opened. And you had to fill out write out a check or a withdrawal slip. And remember, sometimes I've rushed up on, back in those days, you rush up on a Saturday before noon, before they'd close, and you go, oh no, the door was locked. What am I going to do? I've got to go all weekend without cash. But somewhere around there, they put those machines out front, and they gave us a little card. Young people, I know I'm a dinosaur. And you walk up, and you just simply slip it in there and put that pin in there, and it's always available. You can withdraw cash at any time. You can get what you want, what you need in the middle of the night. Well, in some silly, cheesy way, can I explain to you tonight something here that when it comes to the matter of the Lord Jesus, you can come to him in the middle of the night. In fact, he wants you to. And he says, make withdrawals anytime you need to. I'm always open. I'm always available. I'm here for you. Come boldly. Lord, I'm hurting. Lord, I'm scared. Lord, I'm worried. Lord, I'm concerned about my loved one over there across the globe on a mission field. I'm worried and concerned. I know I shouldn't worry, and I'm worried about it, and I'm sick and tired of worrying. I'm worried about my worry, and God, I don't even know what to say. God, I need help. And he says, keep coming. I'll take care of those needs. Come close to me. What's he saying? Bible here is saying, cling to Jesus. Keep clinging to Jesus. In this celebration tonight, this was not a retirement for your pastor. I know him. He's not going to quit. He's not retiring. But I'm going to tell you what he's done here with you for 30 years. It's the same thing he did before he got here as a youth pastor, an associate pastor. And what he did as a teenager, he learned early on, I just need to cling to Jesus. And though his life has been like all of ours, up and down and up and down, and we've known good days and difficult days. He's discovered, like you have discovered, and you need to be reminded tonight, Jesus is your security. You don't need to fret. You don't need to worry. Put your fretting and worrying aside tonight. I mean it. You have a great high priest. Not only that, he is sympathetic. He's not put out with your hurt and your cry. And he's your sanctuary. I had my two granddaughters with me in my vehicle one night. I had to drive up to the church where our mail was delivered when we were home. And there was a bunch of mail waiting on us, and I had to get up there, and I had a key to get inside the church to go get my mail, but it was late. It was getting close to 10 o'clock, and I knew that at 10 o'clock the church building would have an alarm system on it, and at that moment the alarm system would pick up any kind of motion sensor. It was a motion sensor, and it would pick it up, and a siren would go off. The police would be contacted. They would show up on the property. So I'm not thinking twice about it. I mean, you know, I'm just driving along. I got my two granddaughters in the back seat. One is obviously a little bit older than the other one. One of them's basically a baby, about 4 or 5, something like that. I'm driving along, and I start telling the girls. I said, "Now we got to get up to the church and get the mail because that alarm is going to go off at 10 o'clock. And I said, "We're cutting it close, but I said, I think we'll be able to make it." And the older one said, "Well, Papa, what happens if the alarm goes off? If we get in after the alarm is set?" I said, "Well, an alarm will start sounding." And I said, "It's kind of loud, I understand." And I said, "And then the police will show up." But I said, "Don't worry about it. We'll be good. We'll be fine." Again, I'm not worried about it. I'm watching the clock, but I'm telling them because I want them to know when we pull up, we need to get out and get inside quickly and get the mail and get back out. We don't need to lollygag. Don't go running down the hall and make me chase you and that court sort of thing. I said, "We got to get in and get out." That's basically what I was trying to say, you know. Now, the whole time I'm telling this, the baby, 4 or 5 year old, sitting behind me, she's hearing all of this, and she's hearing sirens, police, we got to hurry. And I didn't realize how those little young ears and young heart was getting more and more fearful for something that was silly. something that you and I would say, no big deal. But it was a big deal to her. So I pulled up and I said, all right, girls, we got to get going. And I said, we're going to be fine. And we had plenty of time. I killed the engine. And that little girl was sitting back there behind me. She, of course, was in her little child seat, that little baby seat. And of course, they got them all strapped in there and nailed down and those things, you know. I mean, those little children's seats are there for their protection. I get it, you know. And most of the time, as she would have to sit there and wait for someone to unlatch her and, you know, and unhook everything and so forth. But by the time I killed the engine and got out my door and turned around, she had already had all that off, and she was standing there. I opened the door. The moment I opened that door, she jumped out with all of her might out of the back seat, threw both arms and both legs, and just clung to me and held on. It was then I realized how fearful she was, and that I was the one who had made her fearful. And I said, oh, Amberly, I said, you're going to be fine. Everything's fine. Papa's here. We're going to be just fine. She just clung to me, and I could feel a little bit of that trembling in her. I said, the police aren't coming. We're going to make it. We got plenty of time. We're good. But I got to thinking, I kind of like this. This is special. She needed me. And sometimes I wonder if some of the trials and the worries and frantic moments of our life is just the Lord's way of saying, hey, cling to me. I'm here for you. I'm your security. I'm sympathetic. And I'm your sanctuary. Just come talk to me. And maybe that's what you need to do tonight. Would you bow your heads, please? Tonight, I've probably done this with you before. I think tonight, in light of all that we've done, as we take our next step together with regards to this revival meeting, the altar is wide open for your usage if you need to come. But I'm going to let you stay seated. It's been a great night. We've got more to celebrate here in a little bit. But I'm going to ask in just a moment. I'm not going to ask the question, hey, have you ever been worried? Because every single hand, in all honesty, would have to be raised. We all know fears and worries. We've been there. We've all known moments in which we don't know how we're going to make it. Why is this happening? You may be going through something right now tonight. I don't know. In the next few moments, I'm going to just let you stay seated and take some time with the Lord. You said, Morris, I want to get on my knees. Well, help yourself. Find a place here at the front and just get on your knees if you need to and say, I just need to talk to the Lord about something in my life and in my heart and in my ministry. I just need to talk to him tonight. You do it. It's wide open. You take time with your Lord tonight. I'm going to pray briefly. Music will begin. You take as long as you need. And when you're through praying, you can stand up. I'm going to let Pastor conclude whenever he sees fit in a few moments. Again, the altar's open. I want to encourage you to come if you'd like to. Otherwise, we'll just leave you alone. And you take time with your Lord here tonight. Father, encourage your people. Help us tonight to pray for personal revival. And help us to recognize that we've allowed the world and all of its fears and all of its anxieties and all of its disturbances to hinder us from taking those next steps spiritually. God, it's been so exciting to see what you've done with a church family and with the pastor of the flock. We're grateful for people, all over this room who've been faithful. But Lord, there have been challenges for everyone, pastor and people. And I pray tonight that you'll help us to remember just to cling to you. Help us to anchor our soul in our great high priest because of the security that you bring and the sympathy that you have and the sanctuary that you are. Encourage your people as they spend a few moments with you in prayer, pleading for revival, pleading also for peace in a troubled world. We ask it in your glorious name. You take time with your Lord. You want to get on your knees. You come. As the music begins, you come. You spend some time with your Lord right there, whatever. And when you're through praying, You can stand up. I'll let Pastor conclude as he sees fit.